Saturday, April 22nd. Lyndon is leaving tomorrow for the funeral of Chancellor Adenauer. I am not going because on Tuesday, there are two of the most important things of the year. My annual committee meeting on the preservation of the White House and getting Mr. DuPont signed up for a date between all of his boards and committees is harder than getting one with the president. And then the all-important Senate Ladies Luncheon for me at the Capitol. Third, the reception that evening to honor Mr. Justice Black on the occasion of his 30th anniversary of coming to the Supreme Court. There is a mood about Saturday that makes it hard to work for me, and especially with Lyndon leaving tomorrow. That sense of holiday, of disciplines relaxed, has already set in. So I began to plan tomorrow all the things I wanted to do. Go to see Mrs. George Maurice Morris's house. Maybe arrange a trip down to Fredericksburg to see Monroe's Memorial Library and Law Office. Maybe to be taken through by Mr. Lawrence Governor Hoos. Maybe go to the theater. And so, for these projects, and for playing bridge this afternoon, I made a lot of calls. Betty Talmadge had suggested that we have a bridge game this weekend at her house if I were free. I phoned her that I'd love to, and she set it up for 2:00. I did spend an hour with Marilyn on the family album. Any secretary is good or mediocre in some proportion to the way the boss works with her or him, making her aims, her phrases, the way she does things come through loud and clear, and giving the secretary a sense of participation and hopefully some inspiration. I do not do enough of this. I am boundlessly fortunate in having with me people who've known me so long. But it was a good hour spent with Marilyn, and I think the family album will profit from it. I began doing this in 1946, but actually I went back collecting pictures for my marriage in 1934 and continuing on through the years. At first, one album could contain 5 or 6 years. Now, each year uses up about 4 albums, and there are still many things I would have loved that didn't get in. The criteria is significant event, extraordinarily good photography, or something with an emotional or personal appeal. And the subject matter is the events we shared, Lyndon, me, and the 2 children. State affairs in which we didn't participate are left for his office to record. I had lunch on a tray, and a little after 1, started to Betty Talmadge's to play bridge, but I went the long way around, by Watts Branch, in fact, that dismal, forlorn area on the outskirts of southeast Washington into which Lawrence Rockefeller had poured about $100,000 through the National Park Service just 2 years ago. I believe it was last year when we had the dedication ceremony. I went with some misgivings because I was afraid I would find it trashy or unused. That wasn't the case. It was a thoroughly gratifying experience. There's a little stream that meanders through a rather dull part of town, not a slum, just drab. The banks were planted, and here and there was a little park area with some benches. A man was sleeping on one, and 4 children were running round and round. The stepping stones across the stream are inviting, and up the hill, in the shade, some camellias were blooming, and azaleas would soon be coming out. There were 2 tot lots, and they were used, though the day was rather chilly. I want to come back in midsummer and see how much. Under the trees were 3 or 4 little Negro boys. One of them hollered out, "Is that Lady Bird Johnson?" I said yes and waved at them, and he turned around to his comrades, pointing and jabbering, and then they all exploded in giggles. It was rather fun. It was well kept and used, and I shall love telling Lawrence how it looks on a quite unplanned visit. And then I had to hurry because it was nearly 2 and I was a little late arriving at Betty's. But what a fun thing to do, to simply take 3 hours off on Saturday afternoon and play bridge with 3 friends. It turned out to be Mary Ellen Monroney and Mrs. Maxwell Taylor, all good players. They played just right to suit me, that is, better than me, so that I had to strive, and not so much better that my gaffes made me uncomfortable. And there was fun talk. Mary Ellen began telling some of the adventures her mother had had with a brand new maid who had just come from the cotton fields. She was explaining to her how to serve, first a service plate, then remove it and put down another for the first course. Never let the place in front of the guest be empty of a plate. After about a week, the maid left. Marilyn's mother, puzzled, knowing it wasn't very much work, asked her why. What had she not liked about it? The maid replied, "There's too much shuffling of the dishes for the fewness of the food." I thought of Lyndon's impatience with service plates here at the White House. Mm-hmm. And one of the ladies told of having an Englishwoman to tea, a very proper, elegant Englishwoman, whom she desired to impress with having the tea served just right. The tea table was set charmingly, and the hostess was beaming about everything, and then the maid stuck her head in the door and said, "Do you want it loose or in dim rags?" Betty brought in some delicious iced tea and watercress sandwiches and little hot toasted rolls with orange marmalade, and it was a real women's bridge party, which was delightfully offbeat for me. It was 5:30 when I returned to the White House, just in time to get a comb out by Jean-Louis before our dinner guests arrived. I wore my brown lace and joined them in the yellow oval room about 7. Eric Severide and the Max Frankels, Senator McGee and Lorraine, and the McIntyres from New Hampshire, and then, late and bouncy, Hubert and Muriel, the latest of all, Lyndon. When I'd come in from bridge, he'd still been seated at the lunch table, this past 5:30, with a room full of Texas newspaper editors. He'd gone back to the office to clear his desk and look at the ticker and answer phone calls, so that it was nearly 8 when he came. But he practically never has a drink these days. When he arrives in a room, the talk begins to revolve around him. The conversation becomes one circle, and he is in the middle of it. So I'd used the time before then to ask Max Frankel what he thought of the Punta del Este conference. He was frankly enthusiastic.
He said,
"If you don't have an Arosa Mena at a conference, you ought to invent one." Here this lone president arose to protest, to oppose the United States, and it was up to his fellow Latin American presidents to put him down, to speak for the other side, to expose the inadequacies of his argument. He thought Lyndon had conducted it quite skillfully, it appeared. This made mighty pleasant listening from a New York Times newsman. And then I got Hubert talking about his trip to Europe. Specifically, he spoke of an evening he'd spent having dinner with the Queen at Windsor. The very words are exciting. When it was over, Prime Minister Wilson escorted Hubert and Muriel to their quarters, and at the door, Hubert said, "Won't you come in and have a nightcap?" They went in and didn't find any whiskey handy. Wilson said, "Just a minute, he'd get some." He gave an order, and presently some appeared, and the two men put up their feet comfortably, had a drink, and sat down to quiet conversation, which Wilson began with a philosophic comment. Pretty good for the son of an elementary school teacher and a small-town pharmacist, drinking the Queen's whiskey in Windsor. It was a good conversational evening. A little past 8, we went into dinner. I had Hubert on my right and Senator McGee on my left.
Muriel was the toast of the evening for her handling of a press conference in London. They are such good people to work with.
Zephyr had fixed a delicious dinner. Sliced sirloin and mushrooms, big asparagus with hollandaise, and ending with strawberry meringues. And
I have still to find a great chef whose desserts I like as well as Zephyr's.
It was a good evening. Lyndon was a gay, amusing, delightful host, a wonderful raconteur. After dinner, the ladies and I settled in the West Hall for about 30 minutes' conversation. Otherwise, we never seemed to get our words in. Then, when we'd finished coffee, we went to the Yellow Room to join the men. But Lennon was giving them a tour of the Lincoln Room and the Treaty Room. And when they came back, the evening launched into a series of reminiscences about the great figures in the Senate. Lennon would tell a story about Senator Huey of North Carolina,
with his flower in his lapel and his clawhammer coat, and his way of calling people he really liked beloved. There was a choice one about one time when he had been persuaded by Senator Russell of Georgia that he must change a vote he had given his commitment to make. And he said, "You must give me a few days. I've got to go back and rub out some tracks." And each story would spark another. Hubert would come up with a tale about Senator Kerr of Oklahoma, which would remind Lyndon of something about Tom Connolly of Texas, and so it went on and on. I wished we'd had it recorded. It was a real flavor of 2 decades in the U.S. Senate. It was nearly 1 when the guests left. I knew it was getting late, but I was shocked to see the clock as we walked back up after having put them in their cars. Early tomorrow morning, Lyndon leaves. I wonder if I'm imagining it, or if it really is a feeling in the land that we are emerging on a more satisfactory plateau of handling foreign affairs, of quiet restraint in Manila and in Guam and in now at Punta del Este, behind which our strength is evident. I believe I see Lyndon emerging in the public understanding as a man of strength and patience and toughness, rather than the caricature painted of him, of bombast and buffoonery, by some of the press. The thing I liked most of all during the evening was one phrase he used. It was very simple. I wish I could quote it exactly, but the gist of it was this. What will concern the next generations, what will make or break the world in the decade just around the corner, is a population explosion and the food supply. Those two things and their interplay. Everything else is chicken feed, all the problems we face now. It'd be an interesting evening to remember someday in the rocking chair down the front porch as we watch the Pertinalis.